This podcast is brought to you by Upcase. Want to become the sort of developer top rail shops like Thoughtbot fight over? Join Upcase today to get the pro training, insider knowledge, access to Thoughtbot developers, and a community of like-minded learners you need. Hone core skills like Vim, Tmux, Git, and Rails by visiting upcase.com/halfoff to get 50% off your first month of Upcase. Let's get that junior out of your title and start leveling up today with Upcase.
Where is the red?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, everything is orange. Hi, you're listening to a Tentative, a podcast about product design. I'm your co-host, Red Olemadin, and with me is the amazing Kyle Fiedler. Hi, Kyle.
Hello, how are you?
Great. So, what are we going to talk about today?
I think we ran through our list of topics, and we're tentatively talking about writing as a designer.
Man, you shouldn't have done this. We could just make it appear like, of course, we're going to talk about writing because this or that.
Well, I think it is a good topic because you have recently released a couple of blog posts, right?
Yeah, I released, the third one this week, and the fourth is almost done.
Nice. It'll be done by the time this podcast airs, right?
Most likely, yes.
Put some pressure on you.
No, I think it's already, ready. But yeah, I've been writing, and you also have written some fairly popular stuff on the blog.
Yeah, last year I challenged myself. I wanted to write on our blog a post a month. I almost got there. This year, I don't have any such goals. But I enjoy writing. I enjoy a lot of the reaction I get. That's a lie. I don't enjoy writing. I force myself to write so that I get better at communicating, which I guess is a lead into like one of the things that we can talk about, which is like reasons for designers to write.
Yeah. No, definitely. We can also talk about the different types of writing and how like each one of these types require different sets of like techniques and skills and things like that.
So why do you write? Why do you write on our blog? You also have your own blog that can put in the show notes that you write on.
Sure.
Like, what are the reasons for you to write?
That is a really good question to get things started. So I think one of the reasons why I like writing things is that basically you have like freeze frames of your state of mind at a specific point in time, and you can always go back to that as a reference in the future. Like, I wonder what I was thinking 3-4 years ago about this topic. And then having that like somewhere accessible is good because you can see how much you're evolving as a person, and also it helps you like share that with others as well, especially if you put it online, like in a blog post. And this applies both to personal lives and also professional ones. So just to give you an example, when I was writing the last blog post that was talking about it's basically a tutorial of how to do a custom button in iOS. And I have done the exact same topic 3-4 years ago on the same blog. And just looking at the two, you can actually see a lot in both how technology changed and also how I changed and the way I explain things changed. And that's a really interesting perspective to look at, because when I read the article that I've written 4 years ago, I have trouble actually understanding the mindset that I had at that point, because I was talking about a lot of things that I was supposing that everyone understands, just because at that point I had just understood those things and they were still very fresh in my mind. But now I'm taking more of like an approach where I don't assume that the reader knows any of this stuff. So, and I myself actually try to forget most of those things and really go back to the basics of doing something. And I find that really interesting in the sense that you can see your progress both as a person and as a designer or developer. What do you think?
Yeah, that's actually super interesting that you've basically written the same article twice and that there's a big gap. And I remember I haven't had a chance to read the new one yet, but I do remember reading the old one. So the reasons that I really like to write is it helps me. So I think writing in general helps me communicate better, whether verbally or written, whether it be in email or in Trello or in Basecamp or whatever it is. Like, the more I write specifically like blog posts and get concrete ideas that I have and like put them out in public, and the better I can communicate those, the better I'll be able to communicate everywhere else. Another reason is because it helps me make those ideas more concrete. Like, it helps me think through new ideas that I have. So like, I'm thinking about the job stories blog post I wrote. Like, I basically wrote a lot of the blog post and then implemented it on a couple projects and then went back, re-edited it, and released it. So it like helped me get my thoughts down on how we should approach job stories, and then basically did it.
Yeah.
And then came back later.
That's another like important goal, I guess. To be honest, I don't think of it this way. I don't think of it as a way to improve communication, because a lot of times I would assume that no one would read this. Like, that's how I typically like approach a new like things I write, is like, let's assume that no one will read this. And of course, you need to have some sort of like target audience in mind to write, like to have a good writing, you have to have a target audience. But I try to just like say, well, let's suppose the colleague next to me is reading this and just write it. But let's not assume that this is going to be, I don't know. Although what I'm saying probably does not contradict the point that it still helps you learn to communicate regardless of whether you do it willingly or not.
Right. It's like anything else. The more you do it, the better you'll get at it. And yeah, even if it's, you know, in a certain context, you'll still get better at communicating. Well, I like that. So do you, when you write your blog posts, are you thinking of someone in particular? Are you thinking, hey, this isn't ever going to be read, but this is for me to record like my thought process right now?
This is a really good question, because I think right now I'm doing the former. Like, I'm thinking specifically about, I have like a persona in mind. So for these iOS design blog series, blog post series, I assume that I'm talking to a person who has been doing a lot of web design and doesn't know much about mobile or native development. So that's the persona I have in mind. And whenever I am writing any sentence, I try to review every word I use and make sure that it has either been defined before or will be defined the same paragraph, or at least mentioned that they don't need to understand it right now. So I always make sure that whatever new concepts I'm introducing are introduced in a specific order. Whereas before, for that same article that I've written about a custom button, that was something that I've done without thinking about the target audience. So was that for designers? Was that for developers? Was that for everyone? I don't know. You can basically, it's really hard to actually pinpoint what was the target audience of that one. And to be honest, I think it was me. I've written that for myself. And I think that's one of the other things that I like about writing, is that it helps me document stuff and also share that with others. So if I'm doing, for instance, this thing over and over, like whenever I want to do something, I would think, oh, so what are the methods that I can use to do this sort of thing? And a lot of the blog posts, if you look back at all the stuff that I've written in the last 4 or 5 years, they're all like things that I actually needed to have. Like, I've done one about icons way back. So like icon fonts, SVG, all of that. I've done this one about designing a button. I've done one about retina graphics, like the different for web on Smashing Magazine. Like, there are a few of them that were mostly things that I've written primarily so that I don't have to look them up over and over and over again in different sources. This is like the first category of things. And there's the second category, which I don't do as much, but it's more like opinion pieces. And this is like the sort of stuff that goes a lot in my personal blog, which I renamed to Unredacted recently, but it had different names in the past. And that's where the things are a little bit either controversial or just personal opinion. And in those ones, I don't really invest a lot of time in justifying my point of view. I do actually give a little bit of argument, but it's mostly like, here's my opinion about X. It's here. If someone asks in the future, so what do you think about React Native? I just sent them to my article about React Native. Like, this is what I think about it, at least at that moment when I've written that. And I don't have to repeat the same thing over and over again. So reference and documentation are two things I really like, two aspects I really like in writing, technical writing, or it doesn't have to be technical, but also like opinion pieces about technology, for instance. So, yeah. Do you still keep your personal blog?
I do. I actually wrote a post last week, yeah, actually the beginning of this week.
I read that one.
I'm going to try writing more on my personal blog. Like I said, last year I was trying to focus a lot on writing for Thoughtbot. I'm going to still do that. The difference between, I don't know if I break down the same way that you do, because I certainly have written opinion pieces, or what I think are opinion pieces, for the Thoughtbot blog recently.
Yeah, what was that one that was quite popular?
I would say that the Blurred Lines post an opinion piece.
Yes, yes.
That's the first one that comes to mind. No, the things that I'm going to continue to write about on my personal blog are like personal workflows or things that are like more personal to me. So the post that I just wrote was my 6-year anniversary here. And it was a kind of a look back at how I got to Thoughtbot and how Thoughtbot has grown since I got here. And that was more of like a narrative style post and probably not something that I would put on the Giant Robots Thoughtbot blog.
To be honest, I don't see why not. I feel like Giant Robots has become a lot focused on technology and announcements. I think it would be fine if someone writes something like that. In fact, I think we need more stuff like that. But I'm not trying to coerce.
Maybe I can repost.
No, but this has been something that I was thinking I should start doing more. And the thing of like, you know, writing an opinion piece on the company blog is not something that should be considered wrong.
Right.
If you see what I mean.
It's interesting, though, that to hear how you approach different articles and how you approach, because you have like somewhat of a different approach to each type of article that you're writing, or maybe each article. I usually tackle a lot of my articles of thinking of like just one person, not even a persona, just one person that I'd like to have read it. And whether they end up reading it or not, like sometimes it doesn't matter, sometimes it does. But usually they're like in my head, there's one person that I really want to read each thing that I wrote, and I'm basically writing it for them.
Yeah, I tend to do the same approach, as I said earlier. For very like technology-focused articles, I try to focus on who is going to be reading this, and am I making sense? Because like some topics, you can actually go into very deep into that topic, into the details of the topic, and some other topics, or actually, no, let me rephrase this. In the same topic, you can stay on the surface if you're targeting, for instance, beginners, or go a little bit deeper if you're targeting like intermediate or advanced users or developers. So I guess knowing your target audience is really important. And yeah, sometimes I don't usually have like real people in mind. I just create these personas that are like an amalgamation of a bunch of people. Think of it as just like a chimera or something. And I think of that chimera as my reader. And then I just freak out and no, never mind. This is going out of control. No, but yeah, having a person in mind, even though they might be fictional, is really helpful. That said, for opinion pieces or for things that, when I'm talking about myself or my opinions, at that point, I don't really care that much about having a target audience. I mean, in terms of, I don't want that to shape my writing.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that, both, like, I before I started doing this, like, I would get overwhelmed, especially writing for Thoughtbot, where we have thousands of people following us and reading the blog posts. I would get overwhelmed about thinking about who's going to read it. And it would kind of, like, stagnate my writing.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I like to approach it the way that I do now.
Yeah. There's another thing that I've been noticing when writing for robots is we do actually follow our typical development and design workflow. So you open a PR and you get reviews. And sometimes that's quite a departure from like how most people write that are outside of, you know, like publications and editorial teams. Outside of those like circles, most people just write stuff, probably read it a couple of times and publish it. Whereas a Thoughtbot, at least if you're writing for like the blog or even like it could be for the playbook or for the other, you know, things that we have, you have to go through the review process. And I find that really interesting because there is the part where obviously people are correcting grammar, but there's also the part where actually people trying to influence how you write. Like some people might think that, oh, this sentence is a little bit too strong or this or that. And I find that interesting because it's, you get very like detailed feedback about specific parts of your writing. And I'm not trying to sound rebellious here, but sometimes I do ignore some of the things that would make my article be or feel like it has been written by any other employee of the company. And I typically, that I do not aim for that. I want this to be recognizable as something that I have written. So if it's quirky in this area or it doesn't sound exactly right, at least not, I'm not talking about grammatical errors and typos and that stuff, more like about some parts where you might sound a little bit too confident, or if you see what I mean, like some parts where you see a little bit of personal touch. And I typically do not comment on those parts. And I don't change all of them when they go through review. And of course, I explain why I would like it to stay this way or that way. But I found this part also interesting in the process.
So for the process, I really enjoy the process just because, you know, even after reading over an article that I've personally edited, there's still a lot of grammar that can be a lot better, mostly because I'm a not very good writer. So I enjoy getting a lot of the feedback. My assumption is that our process is actually similar to a more like a publisher, where like we would submit an article to an editor or a group of editors. You know, the people who are doing a lot of the editing on the blog, a lot of the times they're the same group of people that care a lot about writing, and so they do a very good job of catching a lot of the grammar stuff. I agree that sometimes there are things that people point out that aren't grammar, that are more about how you're delivering your message. I haven't gotten as much as those. Maybe I'm not as strong opinionated as you are, or I don't come across as strong.
I don't think it's that's the thing I was trying to point out. I really like the workflow. I think I actually talked about two things at the same time and I mixed them. So I like the workflow and that's great. I love it. I learned so much about grammar, about like, you know, just writing in general. Great. The other idea that I lumped together with that one was that also like when working as a team, there's this interesting dynamic of like how the individual styles come out in writing and how like the review process actually deals with that. And I think that if I have to summarize this, or my idea at least, is that a company blog does not have to have the same tone, or not just a company blog, a newspaper or a magazine. It doesn't have to have exactly the same tone. And I think it's fine if this article is a little bit more humorous or more... I don't know. It reflects the personality of of the person who wrote it, so that you can actually hide the names and read, and you can still recognize, oh, I can know actually who has written this or that. But more importantly, I want to mention something else that I think I'm trying to get to I want to get to the ranty part where I start ranting about things. And this is not one of them, of course, but hear me
out. I really want one of those soundboards so that I can like hit a button when you're about to rant.
Yeah.
Or like when you end rant.
All right. I'm actually about to rant, and this is going to be a little bit off topic, or at least it's still about writing, but things that I don't like seeing these days when I read. So first thing, emoji. Please do not put emoji in your blog posts or in your readmes or in your anything you write online unless it's a personal message in a conversation. Please do not put emoji, because that could be, I think we talked about this in the past, of like emotional, was it emotional design, or did we call it that? I don't remember exactly what we called it, but don't use emoji all over the place. They're useless. They make your writing feel a little bit more hip, but sorry, that's not the point. Like, if I look at that writing like 6 months from now, well, you know, like things, they come and go. So maybe like a few years from now, you look at emoji and start laughing. Although I don't see that them going anywhere, but you never know. But still, what I'm trying to say is that language has enough constructions and tools to make your sentence sound funny or sound serious, or you don't need to add an angry emoji or a smiling emoji to actually I think it's usually a sign that you're not a good writer. So that's number one. Second, don't write on Medium. Sorry, I have nothing against Medium, but I just don't like reading on Medium because everything looks the same. It's like basically you just take a bunch of ingredients, you put them into a mixer, you mix them, and you drink them without knowing what went there. Like, I don't see, like, there's no visual way to recognize who is writing what. And at some point, it just becomes, oh, it's one of those Medium articles. You don't even, like, identify with the author anymore. There's some good stuff in there, but sadly, there's a lot of not good stuff. And that not good stuff actually damages the image of quality of that thing. And since it uses the same visuals and the same layout and everything, it just, to me at least, it starts feeling cheap. Like whenever I see something on Medium, I go in with the expectation that it's going to be mediocre. And that's a bad thing. Start your own blog. It's not really hard. Use Jekyll, GitHub Pages, whatever. There's a lot of tools actually that make it really easy these days. So yeah, those are two of my big pet peeves about writing. And also, don't do the things where like six things you need to do as a designer or some stupid thing like this. I don't think clickbaity titles. I've used them in the past. I'm not saying that I haven't, but I mean, they were fun for like a couple of years, and now everyone knows. Typically, clickbait articles tend to have bad content. They don't have much substance into them. So yeah, I think end of rant. Sorry, I had to get this out of my system.
I don't know if I totally agree with you on Medium. I do think there is a typical Medium post now, and there are a lot of people writing to exactly what that style is, which is kind of weird. But I follow a couple people on Medium and then a topic, and I don't have, except for like when I get a link from, you know, Designer News or one of those other link aggregate things, I don't really end up on Medium posts not knowing who the author is beforehand. So it's like I know before I'm clicking on the link that it's, you know, a certain author, but I can see how once you're in that interface, it does, as you could say the same thing about Giant Robots, is that we kind of bury who wrote it. It's not nearly as important as the actual article.
True. That's a good way to think about it. But at the same time, I think Giant Robots does not, like when you scroll, it scrolls fine. Medium does not. It's jittery and And well, let's not get into these details. I think okay. It's mostly what I don't like about any like silo, especially when it comes to forms of expression. I think is that you're basically, you don't own your writing. You don't own that stuff. It's, you know, and it's a black box. It's there now, but you don't know if it's going to be there. Some people cross post. I know a lot of people who do that, and that's a good thing because they get the best of both worlds. And actually, I thought about doing that at some point, like put stuff elsewhere and also put it on Medium, because some people use just that. And mm-hmm. as scary as it is, it's the truth. Again, like it's just a tool and people use it, but I guess it also like help create a mindset and a community around it. So it transcends just being a tool, and it becomes a way of doing things that defines who you are. So now like you might be X, Y, and also the type of people who write on Medium. It became a category of, you know, of it's a label, and it can be labeled with that. And as much as you can actually not care and just do what fits you most. And I hear the argument of, I write on Medium because I can focus on writing and forget about all the other details, which is fair. But at least the way I see it is that shipping that, like what you write, is also part of the overall experience. Owning your ideas and having total control over them, I think, is as important as sharing them. Like if Medium comes tomorrow and say, hey, we're going to put ads, it's going to be too late for you to say, oh, I don't want ads in my articles. It's not, you don't control those articles anymore. You can delete them, but they still have them backed up, and they have other people who actually won't delete them. So at the end of the day, I think it's, to me, it devalues a little bit the actual content. And it's a personal point of view. I mean, I'm not expecting everyone to share it. Medium is very successful. Proves that actually the majority do not agree with me, which is fine, but I still think that's not the right way to do things, and I will keep saying this until Medium either pivots or dies off or something else replaces it. I don't know, but I don't think this is the... we're going a little bit off topic, so let's yeah, go back to designers and writing. So
one of the things that I wanted to ask you before you started ranting about Medium... and emojis. I agree with you on emojis, by the way, but
no emojis. All right. No emojis.
How do you think of things to write about? Like, how do you come up with topics? Like how do you, you know, on your opinion pieces, on the things that you're writing for Thoughtbot, like what are the ways that you come up with topics? Do you have like some consistent way of like keeping those ideas ready for when you have time to write them? Like,
yes I can answer this question. This is a really good question too. So typically I identify a need regarding something. So typically I would look for an information while learning something and have a really hard time finding it. And typically this is what basically, you know, it's the trigger that I need probably to write about this, so that someone else in the future who is interested in this specific topic will not have to do all of that work again. And this is typically, you know, like tutorials or documentation or technical posts. For opinion pieces, it's when I, you know, when there's something that just keeps bothering me day after day after day, and I have to get it out of my system. Now I have this podcast, so that's great. I don't have to write as much. I was going to write it on Medium, but now I don't have any more. but when something just keeps eating me from the inside, I have a Trello board, personal one, because we have one that's for the company, but I also keep another one for just these like ideas. Like I need to write about this trend or this thing. And a lot of them, actually, I don't end up writing about them because they either die off and they just, you know, people move on, or because I don't care anymore. But the things that I still do care about and I still see them being talked about, I usually write about them, and I just move them from ideas to writing to publishing. And actually, I don't even decide where I'm gonna write about this. just put it there. And later, if I think, you know, I have some time, I'm going to put this on robots, then I just create a card on robots. And if I'm going to do it on my personal blog, I just leave it there. And also, I have been doing this thing, which I think is really good, as far as I'm concerned, is whenever I have an idea, I actually go and start writing immediately in Apple Notes. I used Evernote in the past, but not anymore. I like the new Apple Notes is really good, by the way. They improved a lot of stuff. So I start writing there. It could be one paragraph, and then I just leave it and then come back later. Especially if it's a thing that's of the category of something that keeps bothering me. It's like every time I have one more reason this thing bothers me. So I just put it there as a paragraph. And by like, you know, like after like 4 or 5 months, I've got the article. It's usually not well written, so I have to go over it, clean it up and stuff. And I have tons of those that are not published right now. And a lot of them are a little bit like, you know, they're a little bit controversial. And sometimes I think, you know what, I'm not going to publish this just because I'm currently not ready to either think about this or explain to people this point of view. So I just leave them there. But yeah, this is typically my workflow. And then I use Markdown in Sublime. And recently, or last week, I open sourced and released a Markdown preview app. It's under the ThoughtBot GitHub account, and it's on the Mac App Store. So it's just an app that previews, that does live preview for your Markdown files. Currently, it has the GitHub theme, or at least it's inspired by GitHub. I'm planning to add more themes later, but so yeah, it's not a priority. And I use that to preview, and then I publish. That's yeah. So that's how my workflow typically goes. Cool. How about yours? Do you keep notes or ideas somewhere? Or
yeah, it's actually quite similar to what you do. So when I have an idea, if I have the time, I'll just sit down and write out a really terrible first draft, like as much as I can. If I don't have the time, it's the same kind of approach that you just kind of mentioned, which is I'll write in, I also use the Apple Notes. I'll write like a title and either like an intro paragraph or a closing or like the meat of what I think the article could be. And I'll just leave it in my notes. And like, if I have, when I come back and I do have either time to write or I'm getting that like, oh my God, this, I want to write about this kind of feeling again. I'll sit down and read through that quick and then continue either where I left off or, you know, polishing around it, putting like filling in around it. So I have a similar kind of workflow. I don't have anywhere like a list of ideas, because usually like in the past when I've kept that, it hasn't worked well for me. Like I need that extra paragraph to explain what I was thinking. Because if I just like write down a title or write about this topic, I'm not going to have the same passion for that as I did when I wrote down the topic. So I try to, as much as possible, like write as much as possible when I'm really passionate about that topic. And that way, I think the articles I write that way are a lot better. It's certainly easier for me to write. And then the first draft is always really terrible. Like you said, like from your process of like, you know, writing here and there and ending up with a long article, I have to go back and edit it. And I probably go back and read it anywhere from like 5 to 10 times.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, like the first time is basically I'm rewriting the article. So, and then from there, I'll ask a couple people to look over it before I post it, just to make sure, if it's a personal thing, to make sure that all my grammar is right. And on the ThoughtBot, we already talked about that process. Just making sure that my grammar and everything sounds good before I actually put it out into the world.
Cool. One thing I wanted to sort of talk about before we conclude this episode is the title of this, or at least the topic we hoped to talk about, is designers and writing. So do you think in general that there is a correlation between designers and either the type of articles they write or the frequency of the articles they write. Do you feel like designers write enough in general? Not just in Thoughtbot, but just in general. And also, do you think that you can read an article and without knowing the person, guess that it's written by a designer? I mean, as long as it doesn't talk about a design topic.
So I think, you know, we should always be writing more, you know, within Thoughtbot, myself, any designer. Like, one of the first things that I look for applicants after I look over their portfolios to see if they are writing.
Why?
Because it tells me how, you know, like, it goes back to like how good of a communicator they'll be, how good they can communicate their design decisions, and how interested they are in communicating their design decisions. You know, as designers, a lot of what we do is visual communication, right? But
yeah,
a lot of interfaces, like, I'll start with words. I know there are a few other people that they'll start just with, like, what are going to be the actions on this page? Everything that we design around is around text. So knowing how to write makes, I just think it makes you a better designer. So yeah, the more writing that we can do as designers, the better. Can I tell if it's written by a designer? A lot of what I read is from design articles. I don't know if I've written or read articles that are written by a designer that aren't about design.
You don't read like life experiences and that sort of stuff?
I don't think I've stumbled upon them, so maybe I'm not. The articles that I do read that aren't design related are like from the New York Times or major publications, and I'm guessing that they're not written by designers. So I don't know if I can make that correlation of yes, this is written by a designer, or no, this isn't written by a designer, just because of the topic.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Obviously, I don't have an answer to that question. I don't think I can tell, but there's definitely, as you said, there's definitely a room for more designers to write in. I feel like in general, I think what I wanted to communicate is the fact that designers don't write as much. That's like an impression I have. Like, they prefer sharing their ideas through their design work, because I mean, design has an artistic part in it. It's not art, but you can let some of your individual touch be, like, you know, visible in your work. And usually designers, when they write, it's either to complain about something or to complain about something. Well, at least that's the stuff I read. I know there are people who are not complaining about things, but I typically read pieces where people are not happy with the status quo.
I do think, like, a lot of the designers that I talk to that don't write because they think they're not good at it, which, interesting. You know, to me, like, yeah, I'm not really good at it. You know, I know I'm not good at it because of how many edits I get back from the people I ask edits for. But that's not really a good enough excuse for not writing.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. I mean, I don't claim to be a great writer, but I just do my best and try to improve, I guess. And I think writing in general is really good because it allows people to communicate better. It's actually better than, if you think about it, like, a lot of the arguments that happen on Twitter, they happen just because people don't actually get to explain themselves. So people might agree, but they still disagree on Twitter. And I feel like if people wrote more, designers or just, like, you know, anyone, that would actually be better overall for, like, you know, mutual understanding. Because right. Then, like, you have time to think your arguments and phrase them and put them in a package and someone else to read them, and to also do the same if they disagree with you or if they agree with you. And it's good for our, like, you know, for our industry, and also, like, just in general, for people to understand each other better. Like, we don't need to have, you know, like, these factions of, oh, I am into this thing and everything else is crap sort of mentality.
No, I totally agree with you. And I'm not so worried about people arguing on Twitter and having a misunderstanding there. What I hope doesn't happen is that doesn't happen in real life. Like, talking to clients, talking to other designers, being able to communicate your design decisions and design ideas is like paramount to our job. And the more you write, the better you'll be able to get at that.
And with this, we're concluding this episode. This is the right way to conclude an episode. High five.
High five. Thanks for listening. You can find our show notes at tentative.fm/22. You can tweet us at tentative.fm. You can email us at hosts@tentative.fm. If you liked our show, please rate us on iTunes. And I think that's it. That's a lot of ways to contact us.